darkly haunting atmospherics characterise much of the music of Peter Miller. His two albums, the 1989 soundtrack to Spirits of the Air, Gremlins of the Clouds, and the recently released Love vs. Gravity, are wonders of electroacoustic brooding, evoking imagery ranging from unfulfillable yearning through unspeakable mysteries and unseen wonders to pronounced foreboding. What's your response to such esoteric interpretations of your music, Peter?
I'll go and get a razor blade and cut my wrist. Yes, I think you've made a very accurate assessment there. There's one element in my music which I think people may miss, and I quite often leap in to point it out because I think it's a very important part of it, and that I think that a good deal of it is actually quite humorous as well. It might not appear so on the face of it, but a number of tracks are definitely fairly squarely centred in a humorous concept, if not uproariously funny, just, you know, mildly amusing, especially tracks like the track that uses all the soap opera voices of Love vs. Gravity, which is called Follow Your Heart. And it came from a humorous concept. I mean, basically, I was amused by the way that soap operas can take a level of reality which is completely absurd and try and make it real. So I started playing with voices and the repetition of those voices. There's a kind of brooding, sinister quality that runs underneath it. And I think that soap operas have that to a degree, possibly not intentionally, except for maybe Twin Peaks. I think that that's part of the appeal, because people want to think that life is not just kind of mundane and boring. They want to think there's a mystery there.
That's what it's all about.
Why can't you trust me? Why can't you trust me?
I love
you. Who is it?
Who is it?
I love you. Sweetie, it's like a dream. Expects a man to hurt her. What do you say to him? Why can't you trust me? I will make him understand.
Champagne.
It's too much like vengeance. It's not enough like justice. Who is it?
I think my ideas are essentially not easily categorisable as being visual or being oral or anything in particular, because I don't really come up with the ideas from a visual concept. I don't sort of think, oh, you know, something in my head which is vision, and then think, how can I express that in sound? It doesn't really happen like that. If it happens anyway, it comes from an emotion, and I'm very aware of the visual side of it, but I'm also very aware of the oral side of it. I can't really explain succinctly the way that I see my music or the way that I create my music. It happens in all kinds of ways. The example of Follow Your Heart of Love vs. Gravity is also another good one for that sort of thing, because it came from an amusement situation. I found that an interesting phenomenon was creeping into that particular track, where the very important things that were said were being brought down in their importance, and the very unimportant things were being brought up in their importance, until all of the phrases seemed to kind of find a medium importance. And I found that was a very interesting kernel of of something to start from. You know, it was that concept was very powerful. That, you know, things have a medium. If you take the extreme of anything and kind of repeat it too much, it ends up being the same as anything else. And once that had clicked, then the visual thing started to fire in, and I started to see all the relationships that I could build up from that, and all the power that was happening underneath that. It's humorous, it's sad, it's bleak, it's kind of hopeful in a way, it's anxious, it's depressing, you know, it's got all of that stuff in it by turns. You don't necessarily get it all at the same time, but you can get all of that out of it, I think. But that's not visual, it's emotional, it's all emotional. But then again, some other things that I've done, some of the tracks that are on Love vs. Gravity were either inspired by film or were written for film.
In the case of writing for film, I'm talking specifically of Spirits, did the music precede the film or vice versa?
Well, once again, we're talking about a very integrated process. What was happening was Alex was writing the script and I was talking to him at the same time about various ideas that we had. So we were in the fortunate situation of being able to communicate together while we were creating the film. And so he would tell me about some characters that he was working on, some idea that he had, and I would play him a bit of music, a concept that had come from that or was related in some way. And he would play that while he was writing, and it kind of built in that fashion. That's an enviable situation for filmmakers to be in, because it doesn't happen in the world. The general way of working with film is that film is made, the director goes off and starts on another film, a composer is contracted who then comes in, and if they're lucky, the director and the composer will actually talk together. Quite often that doesn't even happen.
What single word description would you choose to define your music? Is it ambient?
I would choose no single word. I don't think it's fair to try and kind of typecast my music in a single word. My record company likes to think it's ambient, I think. I don't know what ambient actually means. I think Brian Eno is the only person who writes ambient music. Unfortunately, what seems to happen to a lot of music which is called ambient is that it gets put on, you know, in the background, and it becomes an adjunct to some other thing that's happening. Now, I have no objection if people want to play my music like that. It will work like that. But I would really hope that people see that my music's got a whole other facet rather than just sticking it on the background.
So what sort of people, besides those, of course, who listen to this program, do you think your music most appeals to? Do you think it might be too complex a form of communication for most people? And if so, does that matter?
I don't think that it's too complicated for people to understand. I mean, I'm not doing anything that's complicated. My ideas are very simple. I really like melody. I like simplicity. I like cyclical events. As you've perceived, I like emotions which are kind of slightly bleak and slightly somber. Mostly because I think those are the kinds of things that that music, I mean, in our culture, doesn't really touch upon that much. But if you look back through history, you'll see that most composers who are composing because they love music are occupied with emotions which move you in some fashion. And many, many of the great works of music are all incredibly, I hesitate to say dark, but very grand, somber things. Even the things which are, you know, really kind of uplifting, things like Handel's Messiah and stuff like that, do have an incredibly dark side to them. It's just that, you know, everyone remembers the Alleluia chorus, but, you know, nobody remembers, you know, the kind of more bleak stuff about, you know, the world's all going to fall to bits and that kind of stuff, which is what religion is largely based upon.
Do you have an opinion on the so-called ambient musical genre in this country?
I think that it's very easy to pick up an electronic musical instrument these days and switch on the sequencer and have it kind of like do something that's, you know, vaguely pleasant and a bit kind of ambient. But I don't think there's any skill involved in doing that. I can't even see any reason for wanting to do it. I mean, it's a bit like painting a wall for the sake of painting it, you know. It is a very easy thing to do, and there are a lot of people who are doing that kind of thing. And, you know, while I can't really say they shouldn't be, I just think that it's lazy, basically. My music is based on ideas. My music's not based on trying to make people feel good, you know, while they're having a bath. If that's what they want to do with it, then, you know, I have got no objection to that, but it's not the reason that I do the music.
Peter, your album, Love vs. Gravity, has been described as an elaborate collage of some quite diverse elements. Tell me, did you conceive the album as a carefully constructed unity, or is it more of a collection of self-contained pieces?
No, it wasn't conceived as an entirety. What I set out to do was to do something that was a bit different from Spirits. The Forge is based fairly squarely on very modal European music. I like working in the kind of traditional modal styles of music, which is kind of like traditional folk modes. It's possibly because I'm largely self-taught. I haven't really studied music, and so I have a liking for that kind of thing. And I wanted something that was going to be very dark and very somber and very large. And of all the music that I've done, if I could have done it on an orchestra, that track I would have done on an orchestra. It still feels to me that it needs an orchestra to make it work.
Why is it called The Forge?
It's called The Forge because, to me, it had a very kind of Hades-like feel to it. It had all the connotations of the underworld, and I could just kind of see Vulcan sort of smiting his hammer on an anvil when I was doing it. It's got that feel to it, you know, it's got all the kind of voice-like quality to it. I could see, you know, chained souls going down into hell and all that kind of stuff.
Can you tell us a little about your background and how you came to be where you are and who you are today?
My musical training is kind of non-existent. I didn't really study music. I always have these kind of visions of my mother saying, if you don't study your piano, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. And she was absolutely right, of course. But in a way, I think that's kind of liberated me from the shackles of having to think in a certain tradition. I'm really quite a musical ignoramus, so I will go and do things and people will listen to them and say, that's kind of weird. And I'll go, yeah, great. I was trained as an audio engineer, though. I did a course at the film school. I was there for 3 years, and I specialised in audio and majored in sound for film largely. But while I was there, I kind of set up a music studio that they had there and got very interested in doing collage sound work. So I got really interested in that side of things, and then I went off and worked in the film industry for a while doing all kinds of things, and I realised that the only thing that I really wanted to do was work with ideas that I thought were valuable in some way. And about that time, fortunately, I met Alex, who was at that time at the film school, and I met him through a mutual friend, and we had very similar ideas about what we wanted to do, and it was just, you know, kind of a lucky coincidence. He was into the visual side and I was into the sound side, and it seemed like a fantastic concept to kind of mesh together, which is what we did. And we made a couple of short films, and that was kind of good fun. And over the years, we've just kind of built upon that, and my musical ideas have just kind of ridden alongside of the film ideas, I guess.
Just go to sleep, don't think about that. sort of person who just never has nightmares.
They have a start,
and
then
I wake up. Just go to sleep, don't think about that. And then I wake up.
My favourite track from Love vs. Gravity is Careless with Chloroform, which we've just heard part of. It seems fairly reminiscent of Follow Your Heart, which we heard a little earlier, and I'm wondering if you can perhaps explain the differences and similarities between the two.
It has similarities in a fairly superficial way to Follow Your Heart, in that it uses voices, human voices, which kind of repeat phrases. But it has a significant difference in that it arose from a concept and it was manufactured to do what it sounds like, whereas Follow Your Heart came from more or less an idea, fiddling with voices, and then evolved. There's a state that you both go into and come out of when you're going to sleep, which is called hypnagogic state. It's just that period of time before you actually are fully asleep and you're still vaguely conscious, and it's actually classified as a separate state of consciousness. And I was kind of thinking about that state, and I remember as a child I used to hear voices when I was in that state. I'd be going off to sleep and I would suddenly start hearing voices, and quite often they'd be saying my name or something like that. And one of the things that happened is in that particular state was that it was a lot of repetition involved. It was a repeating voices, you know, your name being called but being repeated, or a little phrase being repeated. And I decided that I'd get a whole lot of people together and talk to them about their experiences with altered states of consciousness, specifically things that had to do with you losing consciousness or regaining consciousness. And so we talked about going in and out of dreams, or the dream state itself. We talked about lucid dreaming. We talked about hypnotism. We talked about losing your consciousness when you go into an operation and coming back out of it again. We talked about any state of consciousness which didn't seem normal. And it was kind of a very interesting process for me, because I started finding out all kinds of things about the way other people perceive their altered states of consciousness. And I decided that it would just work very well if I tried to emulate the state of consciousness of being in a hypnagogic state, in other words, going into a dream. And the music itself is based on a set of structured cycles, which are very complicated, and it's really quite unnecessary to know what they're doing. But basically, there's one huge cycle which repeats itself once, and then there are a number of little cycles that sit underneath it which repeat themselves several times. And then there is a whole thing that goes on with things happening in reverse, actually the same cycles happening in reverse, kind of echoing themselves. It's totally irrelevant to the actual concept, but what I was trying to do is get a cyclical feeling happening. And that kind of works, I think, not consciously, but it certainly works in a fairly subconscious sense.
What sort of response do you get from the public to your music?
Not a great deal.
Is that distressing, or...?
I really would like to know what people think of the music. It's kind of difficult, because I'm not setting out to make the music particularly to please anybody. I would really hope that the ideas that I'm using do communicate something to people. I think that I'm not dealing with alien ideas, and I'm not trying to be pretentious or anything. I'm not kind of just doing it to please myself. I think that there are things in the music that I really would hope that people do understand, which is why I say that, you know, I'd hate to think that people just kind of play it when they're in the bath, because, you know, it's accessible in that level, of course. But most of the music has got some kind of idea behind it. And I spend quite a lot of effort trying to do that. So if I'm doing that and people aren't understanding it, it's kind of wasted and I'm a bad communicator. So in that way, I would really like to know whether people do, you know, get anything out of the music, whether it is evocative to them and it does reach them in any particular way. Honestly, I couldn't tell you who listens to it or who likes it or who even, you know, cares.